The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Hi, this is Jim.
And this is Max.
Check out our podcast, The Step Over, Liberty Ballers Podcast Network, for all of your Sixers needs.
Player analysis, game breakdowns, who would look coolest in a headband, and more.
Subscribe to Liberty Ballers podcast feed on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts, and check out The Step Over, a podcast about Sixers basketball.
Mostly.
Michael Kist, Benjamin Solak. It's the Kist and Solak Show, presented by SB Nation and Bleeding Green Nation.
You are flying high on the Kist and Solak Show. This is episode 2, and we just watched a fantastic, thrilling track meet of a preseason game. Woo! I am your host, Michael Kist. Follow me on Twitter at MichaelKistNFL. Obviously, follow my work at BleedingGreenNation.com. As always, I am joined by the best doggone co-host in the game, Mr. 8-Year Streak Without a Bad Day. He is Benjamin Solak of BleedingGreenNation.com as well. Ben, are you doing better than Halapuli Vati Vaitai right now?
Man, I'm doing better than 100 Halapuli Vati Vaitais at this current point. To play the way you did against the Patriots, make the statements you made about playing at the Patriots, and then come out and look worse against the Browns is bad. Like,
and you know you've got Myles Garrett the next week. Like, you know you're in trouble, and you put that out there. It just feel like everything's snowballing for him right now.
And while the prevalent message of the Eagles brass and coaching staff and veterans has been, you know, this team is not experiencing a Super Bowl hangover whatsoever, if that might be like the zeitgeist, but there's still a chance that you have stragglers, you have individuals, right? And Big V had a solid playoff run. It was pretty good. And I don't know, this has been a really just rough preseason for him, man. It is not encouraging whatsoever.
Yeah, and you can check out my article on him at BleedingGreenNation.com. I went back and looked at over 600 different snaps from Big V after the preseason game last week where he really struggled. Man, I was not encouraged by it whatsoever. And then he comes out here and he can't block Myles Garrett. And obviously, we have a lot of things to talk about on this show, but that was like the one thing that stuck out to me in the very beginning, along with Nick Foles' crazy preseason play. I don't know how much to read into that. But 5-0 is the score. The Philadelphia Eagles drop another preseason game. Should we be concerned? My column, all that stuff. I'm not really all that concerned. But one thing I really am concerned about, and this touches on, you know, what we were talking about, is the offensive line depth is bad. And that's a very important part of the puzzle for us, because you look past Big V, who has looked awful, who is in quicksand and can't get right. And what's behind him? And what's behind the guards? And outside of Siamalu at center, I think he plays well, but he can't snap. And we play shotgun 77% of the time. He can't shotgun snap. Like, what's going on with the offensive line depth that you saw throughout this game?
I would say that offensive line depth, and let's take a moment, Michael. What was it that you and I were standing so hard for coming into the 2018 draft? That's right. It was that they draft a tackle at a premium. I just wanted to make sure that that was clear for everybody in case you're a new listener or you forgot. I don't know how you would have forgotten because we said it a lot. But here we are. I think offensive line depth is my biggest concern for this team currently outside of one, you know, Carson Wentz health, which is just like, obviously, I think that's concern number one for everybody. And that'll be answered within, you know, the next 1 or 2 months. Hopefully, you know, we'll have a confirmed right. answer on that, and then it'd be done. And then number two would be who's defensive tackle next to Fletcher Cox. Destiny Veo lines up there very often, especially in the preseason as a young player, getting those reps against the ones, but I haven't seen anything inspiring from him. Haloti Ngata, second team
premium
reps.
Premium pass rusher.
Yeah, exactly. Put a little spin move on him. You know, 45-year-old spin move. He's been working on that for the past 24 seasons. He had a couple good pass rush reps, but you don't know how much juice he has. You don't know how many snaps you want him to be seeing and everything. So who's that defensive tackle? But behind those two concerns, it's okay if Kelsey goes down, right? You're assuming they move Wiz to center and then Samuel to left guard. Oof, you know, if Lane goes down, who's the backup right tackle? Is it Taylor Hart? Is it Big V moving over, which can't help an already rough left tackle? You know what I mean? Like, there's just big time concerns for this offensive line if one of the pieces goes down. And the offensive line makes money by being continuous, by being very harmonic, you know, working well as one unit of five people. And obviously to take one out of it is going to be a huge blow, but especially for an Eagles offensive line that executes a ton of different blocking assignments, is predicated on incredible athleticism, and is very, very versatile within the game, making a lot of calls to one another, adjusting play structure and line responsibilities based off of the looks they get on a defensive line. I would say it's an increased need to have really good harmony across that line. And so, you know, Stoutland loves talking about how smart Samuel is, how much that helps him play at his different positions, how well that helps him when he's the pivot. But to me, you know, I haven't seen him block well at a spot. Yeah. Like I don't see him handle power well, regardless of where he is. So, at the end of the day, you got to be able to block people. This is the offensive line. Like, it's, you know, it's kind of like we puff up quarterback, we puff up wide receiver. At the end of the day, you got to be able to throw the ball, catch the ball. Offensive line, you got to be able to stop people and move people. And Samuel doesn't do that. And Chance Warmack doesn't do that. And Halepuli Vaitivaitai in the running game does that pretty well. But in the passing game, he doesn't do that. And that should be, you know, concerning.
Yeah, and even Vaitai, he struggles to sustain his blocks. Like, he does enough for the first 2 seconds, but once it gets out of that sphere of those 2 yards, he tends to struggle to sustain because his balance is just absolutely everywhere. And to your point, Siamalu, I think he's fine as the sixth offensive lineman when they go heavy, and you kind of put him on the outside where guys tend to be lighter. But I think you're correct in your assessment that inside, he has problems with guys that are, you know, anywhere from 280 to 310 pounds coming in his face.
More, yeah. I mean, 320 pounds. We got some big boys, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So outside of the offensive line depth, because, I mean, we're showing our nerd here talking about offensive line for the first 7 minutes of the show, which is...
Yeah, we didn't do our little playful banter. Maybe we'll have to end with that.
Yeah, exactly. Outside of that, I wanted to see, and I put a list out there, so I'm just going to kind of pick through a couple of these. I wanted to see the nickel cornerback job one. I thought Sidney Jones played okay. Avante Maddox had an up and down night. I saw him get stiffed arm to all heck on a run. And even the defensive backs had trouble tackling early in this game. And it was bad in that regard. And then they got to the goal line stand where especially Sidney Jones did a fantastic job on the rub routes that the Cleveland Browns were very focused on that goal line stand. I thought they did fantastic there.
Yep.
And then Avante Maddox gets the pick, which unfortunately he doesn't take back to the house, and he is going to get heckled to all heck.
Listen, the best thing that came out of this football game, my good friend, was just the gif of Nigel Bradham, Fletcher Cox, and Malcolm Jenkins with dire intensity. Like, this was a momentum shifting 6-point swing in a key regular season game against a divisional opponent. If you just watch the clip of Bradham, Cox, and Jenkins whipping their arms and screaming go, and then the entire sideline jumps up and puts their hands on their head when he gets shoestring tackled on the sideline. Oh, there's nothing. Listen. In training camp, when the DBs get a pick, they go bananas, right? And so I knew if Maddox took this off Baker, right, off the first overall pick and housed it, that there was going to be electric slides. There was going to be cha-cha slides. There was going to be, I don't know, other old chicken dances. It was going to be mayhem out there. And that's the only thing I wanted in this stupid game to, in the middle of the third quarter, have a massive dance break from Jalen Mills and Rasul Douglas, and it didn't happen, and I was very disappointed in Maddox. Stock down.
This is definitely stock.
I should have put him in my losers. I didn't.
Yo, you didn't. We're going to have to do a separate article for that. Maybe I'll do that with like a film piece, and then I'll retroactively put him in there. I'll Photoshop it in there. I'll just throw that in the article. But yeah, so other than that, how did you do you think anybody separated themselves there at the nickel position, which is going to be extremely important for us when the season begins?
I have never thought that Sidney Jones didn't have it. You know what I mean? Like, Sidney and Bowsby were rotating reps there in the beginning of camp, and then Mattis would take second team reps there, and Sidney looks to me to be better than Bowsby at that position on the interior. And then Maddox started to get more run there as he definitely grew during training camp. You saw the rookie, the rookie shakes, the rookie struggles kind of shed as he would get more comfortable in his own shoes. And then he got more first team reps there. And I still thought Sidney was a couple of heads above him. And that's not to say that Sidney is great right now, because he isn't. Sidney very much so is a player who just hasn't played football in a year and had to have a really weird adjustment to NFL play because he had his injury at the worst possible time, right? Didn't even do one sort of training camp thing. He looks like you would expect him to look as a player who got injured right before his first training camp began. You know what I mean? So there's going to be a developmental process. There's going to be a learning curve. I firmly believe that the best way for Sidney to develop is to just get him out there, because the poor guy hasn't played the sport in so long, and let him lose a couple reps, as every young corner has to do, and let him get his sea legs back under him. Let him get back to his aggressive style of play from Washington. To me, that's the best route for him moving forward. So Sidney, to me, has always just been the guy who I presume is going to start in the nickel. Nothing really changed for me tonight.
Are you concerned at all with the Super Bowl MVP, Nick Foles, going 13 for 17, 127 yards, two interceptions, putting a big goose up on the board in the first half, and obviously the Eagles for the entire game? We've said it before, Nick Foles isn't a fantastic practicer. We are not game planning to his strengths in the preseason. We're trying to evaluate these other players and set these things up for them. I'm personally not concerned. Do you think, because there's going to be a ton of hot take columns out tomorrow about Nick Foles, because he has just not played well this preseason. And like I said, I'm not concerned about it. Are you pretty much the same? I think we're of the same mind of this, or am I wrong?
The Eagles' week one offense, that's not true. The Eagles' fully healthy offense, whatever week that is, will have, depending on how you count starters, about six different players, over half of the roster out, right? Okay. So let's remember that from the jump, right? Like if the Eagles are fielding this
offense, and the skill position players too, like the wide receivers,
it's all wide receivers, Mike. It's starting left tackle, starting quarterback, starting running back, and then two, maybe three starting wide receivers. Again, depending on how you're counting is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Right? Depending on what personnel you're in. It's like five or six different guys. I'll put it to you this way. Like, if Nick Foles were playing under these circumstances in the regular season with how much pressure he was getting today, nobody would have expected anything different except for a two-pick performance from Nick Foles. Because that's who Nick is, right? And what's very important to remember is that Nick played amazing in the playoff run, and Nick played awful tonight, and those two things are both like equally true and are just him. That's his profile, and it always has been, right? So I love it when Foles comes out and plays like this against the Browns. I think it's very, very important, because it reminds us, number one, why he's a backup. Mike, you remember when people were like, the starting quarterback controversy in Philadelphia, right?
Oh, my God.
We need Nick to do this to remind all of us how the world actually works, yeah?
Yeah.
And then number two, it reminds us how magical our Super Bowl run really was. It reminds us how things could have gone. Like, you know how we like to make fun of Minnesota because we pulled their pants down on a national stage 38-7, yeah? That could have been us so badly, so badly, but it wasn't. And so it makes me more appreciative of the impossible aligning of stars that was the 2017-2018 playoff run. So I don't care whatsoever. Obviously, Doug cares a lot. Doug is not thrilled. That had me dying, man. Because here's why I like that. Because what you say to Aaron Andrews about your 7-year Super Bowl MVP winning vet does not matter, right? If he's like a rookie, if that was like Baker Mayfield went out and did that, never say that to a reporter about him. You're going to throw him off. You know what I mean? Right. Maybe not Baker, because Baker's super competitive and crazy. But, you know, it's Nick. Nick knows you. You've worked with him for a long time, and you guys are comfortable together, and Nick knows he'll be fine, right? So just say, like, no, that was awful. We don't know why it was awful. We're working on it. You know, that's fine. I'm okay with that.
I agree.
It was an entertaining off-field night, man.
For sure. So, all right, moving on from one quarterback to another, Nate Sudfeld, to me, continues to look pretty doggone good. And he put one in the bucket where Davis was just out of bounds. And
I'm so pissed,
it made me jump
man.
Out of my seat a little bit.
Because I like Rashard Davis. I like Rashard Davis better than DeAndre Carter and better than Greg Ward. And he had a great touchdown catch against the Patriots with Sudfeld. And then if he caught that one, man, I was about to go nuts. But that was upsetting.
So you like Davis better than Carter, because Carter had a very good night. DeAndre Carter, he had the punt return as well.
Yeah, no, this was the best I've seen Carter. You know what I mean? Like, he obviously had a huge opportunity to be playing with the ones, which that's the biggest signal of anything, right? Like, you know, catches and screens and punt returns, all that stuff. What matters the most is that the coaching staff gave him those reps over Davis and over Greg Ward. That's what's important, is that they clearly view him as more likely to be in the long-term plans. And Eagles are going to have wide receiver spots open. Alshon Jeffrey's not going to be available week one. Obviously, there's a chance he's still rostered. He's not on the PUP list or whatever. But they're going to need that wide receiver 5 and 6 to have significant reps if Jeffrey's unavailable to go. And obviously, Hollins and Nelson are also kind of in the air. So, you know, Carter might have a path to sticking on the 46-man active roster, at least for the first few weeks of the season. But yeah, I like Davis.
Do you think that Nate Sudfeld is the next Dak Prescott?
In that he's going to make some really bad off-season decisions, both photo and otherwise. Nate's just the ideal preseason quarterback, man. Like every time he rolls out, I'm just like, here we go. Send it 50 yards, Nate. Let's freaking do it.
Yep.
That fourth down throw he had there on the last series was a nice ball. And he wanted Dallas Goedert across the middle on that same drive where, man, he can bean it in between two guys if he wants. He's got a laser.
So, okay. So we covered quarterbacks. We talked about some wide receivers. We like DeAndre Carter. We like Davis. The fourth running back spot, something that's hotly debated here in Philadelphia for some reason. Very important to the people. We've got Jay Ajayi, Corey Clement, and Darren Sproles coming back. You'd think we would be satisfied with that, but everyone wants to know who the fourth running back is. So you've got Josh Adams coming out today and had a few good runs where he showed some good finishing, and that was impressive. I needed to see that from Josh Adams, because I really hadn't seen much before that from him. He had a decent game against the Steelers, where he didn't do much last week because he wasn't active. But look, the fourth running back spot, I honestly think it should go to Charcandrick West, the guy out of Kansas City that was just released. So Charcandrick West is a known quantity, number one. You're not projecting anything. Danelle Pumphrey is obviously not healthy. Josh Adams hasn't done anything for me. Matt Jones needs to be cut yesterday with his performance and his ball security issues.
The amount of people who told me that Matt Jones was going to make a serious roster spot push when he was first signed. Woof.
And I like Charcandrick West better than Terrence West, who is also out there in the market. West is going to give you some third down versatility. And I remember watching Spencer Ware with the Chiefs and kind of pounding the table like, hey, if we can get him for cheap and we really need a running back, this is before we got Jay Ajayi, then, you know, I'm cool with Ware. And then Ware went down with the knee thing in preseason last year. But while I was watching his reps, I was also seeing what Kansas City was asking the other running back to do that they weren't asking Ware to do, because that's kind of how you fill out your evaluation, get your context. And I really liked him as a pass blocker. He was solid as a receiver, and he was decent as a in-between the tackles runner. Nothing to write home about at all as far as that goes. But, you know, quick, can get around to the edge. Like him in the passing game, I think he's got pretty much the skill set that we're looking here for in Philadelphia. And if the fourth running back spot is really prioritized by this coaching staff, then I think that's the way that you go. Would you agree with that, Ben?
To me, the one question that matters that I don't know how to answer is, what does West give you on special teams? And obviously Doug is the guy who's going to be able to answer that because Doug is very familiar with him. And if the answer is literally anything or above, then yeah, sign Trek Andrew West. He has more veteran experience. You know, he's a more known quantity. You've worked with him before. To me, what you have to ask yourself with running back four is this. With Sproles, Klemet, and Ajayi being a really well-rounded trio, those guys provide a lot of stuff for you. They pretty much combine, do everything you want your running backs to do, run certain schemes, be able to protect, all be effective on third down as pass catchers. Okay, wonderful. With that the case, who is worthy of holding on to in the long term? I don't think that's Matt Jones very easily. I think Smallwood, we've been holding him on that argument for a while now, and it's tough to justify it with every passing year that he doesn't take a big step forward.
Mm-hmm.
Can you say it about Josh Adams? I think some people think you can, and I understand why, but to me, I can't say that. You know what I mean? I don't look at Josh Adams and I go, that's a guy I can develop into a complementary piece. I don't see that from him. I don't see an NFL caliber athlete. I don't see a player with NFL caliber vision.
And you know, I didn't like him coming out of college, and I watched a lot of Notre Dame, and I wasn't particularly impressed with him. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's running behind Mike McGlinchey, who's an excellent run blocker, and Quentin Nelson, and getting like these big holes, and I thought he left some yards on the field. And I also think he's being gassed up because he's a local boy.
Okay, all right, listen, a beat reporter who shall not be named tweeted after his first run, 7-yard run off tackle to the left, that he broke 3 tackles. All right, 2 players nipped at his ankles, all right? He, like... helped stiff arm one into the ground while the player was already nipping. He broke 0 tackles. He ran to the outside. As I can't handle that sort of stuff. But so Josh Adams, maybe not. Like, if they hold on to Josh, I'm gonna sleep at night. It won't be my favorite decision, but I can get it. There's a conversation to be had with Danelle Pumphrey, but honestly at this point, it doesn't seem likely the coaching staff wants to hold on to him. And if he's not gonna be healthy, like, I totally get that. I'm a fan of the player, but if he's not gonna be healthy, then it doesn't, you know, it doesn't matter. And so if you can't justify like a long-term investment for the four of them, either one, use the position, use the roster spot somewhere else and hold on to a player you want to hold on to. Like, what if instead of 4 running backs and 9 offensive linemen, you do 3 and 10 and keep my lot on the 53-man roster? You know, like, to me, if instead of exposing my lot potentially to waivers, protect him. And we don't need a 4th running back, you know, and it's very easy to pick running backs up off the street and have them at least supply something for you in the event of injury, right?
Yeah.
Or if you're like, all right, West can give me 7 significant snaps a game with some of them being on special teams, then sign him for a 1-year deal and do it. You know, this is running back 4 that we're talking about.
It's very important stuff, Ben. Mm-hmm. It's very important. And I just realized we talked about defensive tackles without talking about your boy Bruce Hector.
I was gonna say we buried the lead. I was gonna yeah. Reach the topic because we hadn't gotten there yet. What? Where? From what? Listen, this wasn't happening in training camp. All right. I mean, he was going up against 3s, so he was like having some good reps, but he only really started to get significant D2 reps, I believe it was last week. And shout out Brandon Gowton, who identified that and has started the Bruce Hector train before I got on it today. I haven't been watching him. Also, BLG likes to bring up the fact that Hector got the most guaranteed money from the Philadelphia UDFAs, which is a pretty decent signifier, yeah. But Bruce Hector took a right guard in Spencer Drango, who has played starting snaps in the NFL, Mike, and just toasted him. I mean, like, after the first drive, I was like, oh, he had some good reps on that drive. But he had like 2 more drives against Drango where he was just tossing him around. And Hector is quick. He is much quicker in a two-step phone booth. I'm not talking about like he's chasing people down or anything. But his ability to disengage and get involved, to make that tackle radius a little bit bigger, I mean, expand that area of influence, it's pretty sweet. Like, that's a nice little skill you've got there. You know, one of the things that makes Timmy Jernigan a really good player is that Jernigan can transition from being engaged with a block to getting involved on a tackle that's like at or near the line of scrimmage, like right in his area, the first level, very quickly. And you see that with Hector as well. It's a combination of vision instincts and then hand strength and flexibility in the body. The mental aspects and the physical aspects. You see that with Hector. He pushes the pocket on pass rushing downs. He's not a, he's not, you know, like Vail, he's not a pass rusher. Like Nada, he's not a pass rusher, which is what the Eagles kind of need for DT2. But he clearly has rosterable talent. And he was a pretty big recruit coming into South Florida. You know, Deidre Sanat was the much bigger name coming out, a third round pick to the Falcons, also defensive tackle. But I remember when I was researching Sanat, I read about Hector, who was a bigger deal coming into the program as far as, you know, 3-4 star rating or whatever it was. So there's talent there. And I think he's clearly a 53-man roster player. Elijah Qualls, man. I like Elijah Qualls' talent, but there's something missing there in terms of work ethic or effort, clearly, because he's just bottomed out from what I can see.
Yeah, and we needed to see some solid play from the defensive tackle depth. Nada looked good. We don't know how much he has in the tank, but that's encouraging after he was out for the season last year. I think it was what with a torn tricep or something like that. Yeah. But Bruce Hector beating up on Spencer Durango was definitely encouraging, and keeping it on the defensive line. And this actually ties in with the nickel cornerback argument as well. Did you see Derek Barnett drop into coverage and do a darn good job?
Yeah, it's because
looking at me like a.
That's because Derek Barnett is a 3-4 outside linebacker, as I've said many times. Listen, I don't like, and this is what I have to emphasize for you. I think Derek Barnett is a fine football player, and I've said this since day one. And the other thing I've said since day one is that Derek Barnett makes impact plays. The thing is, he doesn't very often make impact plays on reps where he's tasked with beating an offensive tackle who puts up a fight. Like, I got shared many times tonight some of Derek Barnett's highlight plays. What was a very impactful and eventful first half for him. Joel Bitonio either didn't hear the snap count or was laid off the snap count, and so Barnett walked right by him and then blew up a running back in the backfield and got held and drew a penalty. Derek Barnett identified a screen that was already in the process of getting blown up by somebody, I'm pretty sure, and then made the tackle in pursuit. And then, yeah, Derek Barnett dropped into coverage. I don't want him to be good at those things. You know, like, obviously I do, but I'm saying that's not what I want to see from Barnett. What I want to see from Barnett is something that I saw a flash of tonight, which let's focus on that rep. He had Bitonio. He was a stand-up nine tech. He got right into Bitonio's frame, used his hands to create initial displacement, then tucked his elbow underneath in a rip and bent to put pressure on the quarterback's set point to not get pushed beyond the peak of the pocket. He wasn't able to disengage and really create a pressure or a quarterback hit or a sack, but he collapsed a pocket, which when you're on a defensive line like Philadelphia's, that in and of itself is big because somebody else is probably also getting pressure at that time. So you're closing the door to escape. That is a positive contribution. There's room for improvement in that rep, but it was a decent, solid, positive rep. So that's the sort of thing that I want to lock in on for Derek Barnett. I will ask you a question now, defensive lineman.
Yeah.
Did you see Josh Sweat tonight?
Yeah, dude. He looked good. He looked fast, man. He looked real fast. And there's a thing with Sweat, and if I could point this out real quick, when you watched his college tape and he didn't look the burstiest off the line, well, a lot of people were confusing the fact of what his read is. His read as a four-eye, where he's kicked a little inside at Florida State, where he's kind of miscast there and asked to defend the run a lot, his reads were, I move on the movement of the tackle, right? So the ball can snap, and then I'm reading the tackle, so I might be a little bit late off the line. When he's able to get on that outside wide nine and then look at the ball and read the ball and get off the line, he's got some burst to him, man, and he can come down that line in a flash. And he showed that on, I know he had a tackle at the line of scrimmage, or it was a loss or something to that effect, but pretty much all night, he looked solid, man. He looked real solid.
I spent so much time at camp. I talked with Sweat about it too, going, man, he looks like he just needs some time to adjust. Like, he's just not super comfortable yet. Like, he would explode upfield, but then he would immediately transition to an inside rush move when he didn't need to. You know what I mean? Like, he was still just in old habits. And then one day, just between the first and the second preseason game, something clicked because he started whooping tail. Like, he beat Jason Peters on multiple reps. And he was showing up everywhere. And then the Patriots game, he had a good game. And then just today, again, going up against some second and some third teamers, right? Josh Sweat's not going to step out on the field and have six sacks this season. I don't think so. But clearly something is starting to work. The light's starting to come on for the rookie. And a similar thing has kind of happened with Maddox. Maddox has been surging into more of the competition recently because there's been a clear development. To me, it was a little bit more linear with Maddox. He was getting better every day. With Sweat, there was a big scalar jump, and that makes me excited. And the fact that Josh Sweat and Steven Means are technically like our fifth and sixth edge rushers is bananas, because they could be a low-end starting duo in the league, Mike. Like, starting. Like you'd want to add somebody to that. But Steven Means and Josh Sweat could start on some of the teams in the NFL. It's wild.
And that's encouraging to hear what you just told me about Sweat, because he had so many reps from that four eye kicked inside at Florida State that you knew it was going to take a little bit of a time for him to adjust to life on the outside. So seeing the light bulb come on like that, very important. And Steven Means, man, just continues to impress me all the time. And he's really come on. The team loves him. He's going to make this roster. There's no room for it because, what was it, someone from – I forget which team it was, but they were asking, is there any chance that Joe Osman, the undrafted free agent out of Central Michigan, makes it to waivers?
The 49ers. It was Brian Peacock.
Yeah, and we were, absolutely. How can he look better than how Steven Means has looked and the promise that Josh Sweat has shown? They've been really good this preseason, so I love the depth there. Concerned with the depth on defensive tackle, we saw some promising signs tonight, but the depth as far as defensive end goes moving forward absolutely looks fantastic. And then, you know, you have Michael Bennett, who you can move around this year and kind of create havoc with him. He got home on a stunt, which I think we're going to run some more stunts this year. There was another sexy cover zero blitz that they had on third down where they got home, and it was Jordan Hicks coming loose. That was pretty, and Jim Schwartz really likes that on third down.
Listen, I was one of my winners that I listed, which probably isn't how you're supposed to do preseason winners, but I don't really care. Was five-man fronts and Jim Schwartz, because he was doing this in 2017, but I don't think it was at this high a frequency. I've seen so many five-man fronts in camp. You've seen so many of them in the preseason game, and they work very, very well. And simply the reality is this. I have Fletcher Cox. You want to double-team Fletcher Cox. I'm going to put five people on the line of scrimmage. You can't double-team Fletcher Cox now unless you're leaving in a tight end or a running back to block, right? Haha, I win, you lose. And then what we saw first, third down, Fletcher and Michael Bennett as three techs. Derek Barnett and Chris Long as stand-up nine techs. That's already a problem, right? And then just a double mug look. They just had two, I think it was Malcolm Jenkins and Nigel Bradham. I'm not positive. Doubling up the A-gaps, right? And they were like a couple yards off the ball and closer, a couple yards off. And then Bradham came. But he came to the B gap. Michael Bennett shifted to the A gap. The offensive line was, of course, sliding to Fletcher Cox's side because Fletch, right? Which means that guard went with Bennett. That tackle stayed on an island with the defensive end. Bradham has an alleyway. So he sent five against five and had a free rusher. And that's what a five-man front can do, right? Obviously, this is more of a six-man front situation, but that's what you can do when, instead of being like the 2014 Schwartz, you kind of step out of the chains, the limits of a pure four-man rush, and you allow yourself to get some creativity involved. It makes for incredibly powerful rushes when you have those sort of defensive line threats. So yeah, Schwartz the blitzer, oh, I'm so down, man. I love it.
And what I thought they were going to do on that third down that I was talking about, they originally started double mugging the A-gap with Michael Bennett and Fletcher Cox on either side of the center. And I said, are they going to run a little stunt game here, a little inside stunt game with Fletcher Cox being the smasher that takes two guys out with Michael Bennett looping around? And they ended up shifting, but then they also ended up with something that got a free guy through. And I was like, this is absolutely beautiful, the versatility that they can show and what Jim Schwartz is going to be able to do with these guys up front. It's going to be nasty. Going to be real nasty.
Let me ask you this, Mike. Here's my overarching question for three preseason games in, 14 drives for the offense with 0 points, 0-3. Here's my question. How badly would we be overreacting to this preseason if the Eagles hadn't won a Super Bowl in February?
Can you imagine? I was thinking about that during the game, and I was thinking back to last preseason when everybody was freaking about it, but the run game was terrible in the preseason. Yes. We all remember that.
Yes.
If you really think about it.
I had to write an article for y'all about, like, hey, maybe because there's defenders in the backfield, it's okay that Danelle Pumphrey picked up 0 yards on this run.
But yeah, dude, the sky was falling on certain things, and if this was not post-Super Bowl, it would be all about the Eagles lost the Super Bowl and this is the hangover. This is what happens to teams. Everything is bad. Never love anything. That's where we would be at. I mean, and you know, we saw this attitude from the fan base during the offseason. Usually the draft is like popping. Usually it's really popular. There was a very laid back, and obviously we had like a very good turnout as far as like doing the draft shows and everything like that. People were interested in it, but it wasn't like that rabid feel of like, we need this and we need that, and mm-hmm. we'll never win if we don't get this and that. And then we come out in the preseason and we stink the joint up. And when you look at like a result based feel of things, no one's it doesn't seem like anybody's panicking. And if right now, if someone, and I'm telling you that column's coming tomorrow, someone's going to write this column and they're going to get a lot of hate from the fan base because you cannot talk about this team right now. Someone is going to write, is the sky falling column.
Okay. What will we do when... All right, I'm going to tweet the gif of me riding the bike and saying bye-bye. I just want you to send me that tweet, and that's how I'm going to respond. At this point, I'm at the point in my Twitter life where I used to be like, hey, don't be annoying to people. And I'm still like that, but I'm also like, hey, when people do really stupid stuff, be a little bit obnoxious. I'm starting to kind of stretch myself out a little bit.
Where'd you learn that from?
I learned that from you, from following examples. Here's my thing is that I think to myself about like Josh Sweat. This is what I think of. Obviously, at a huge position of strength for Philadelphia. But I even think last year, like running back was a pretty big position of strength for the Eagles. Or no, it was Blunt and Sproles, which is like pretty decent.
Right.
But, you know, Pumphrey.
And people were freaking out.
Right. So Pumphrey comes out and he doesn't play very well. I'm just using Pumphrey as an example here. It's not because I like the player.
Right.
He doesn't play well whatsoever in the preseason. And people are like, this guy's a bust. This is crazy. He's so bad. You know, this awful pick trading up. Total waste. Okay. 1 year later, and Josh Sweat really, like, he's had a couple of, he's come on as of late, but he really wasn't terribly strong, you know, as of like 2 weeks ago. And.
Right.
He's got huge injury history, right? Like crazy, like very limiting. And you don't hear anything about like Josh Sweat was always a pick, whatever, right? Which obviously like kind of the third party community, like the Twitter community was into Josh Sweat's tapes. It's a bit different. But like stuff goes bad now and people are just like, oh, shucks. And that's it. And it's really, I just want this to never wear off ever. This is amazing.
If you were to take some Doug Peterson quotes from this year, and apply them to the questions that were being asked last year, people would be losing their minds.
Yeah.
That's how I
right.
see it.
Like, Doug is like, listen, that was so bad. Like, Nick was awful. I'm so disappointed. We're all like, dude, it's fine. Don't worry about it. We're going to be good. Like, when did we become this level-headed? It's crazy. Eagles have just, like, stunk it up this preseason. We're all like, listen, it ain't even a sweat, man.
Yeah. So, one last thing before we touch on final thoughts here. The Will linebacker spot, the third linebacker spot. I think it's Kamu Grigio-Hills.
Yeah.
I know you were watching Nate Gary in the second half, and especially the passing downs. Did you see anything that would move the needle for any other linebackers to challenge Kamu, or is it Kamu? Kamu.
It's Kamu. Kamu. It's Kamu. And Kamu? And whenever he makes a good play, we all go Kamu.
Kamu. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. You're right. You're right.
Now. I have like an inkling of a take which began formulating in my mind while I was watching Nate Gary, and it's not even officially a take yet, right?
Nice of you to bury it for the 40th minute. Nice and safe, Ben. I like it. What's the take?
The take is he's not good. Like this is just, here's the thing, Mike, is he's not a safety and he's not a linebacker, right? Like he,
that no man's land. I agree.
He comes downhill to fill as a linebacker and he's gotten bigger, but there's just no thump. And then he drops into coverage as a linebacker and it's just all too quick for him. And when he was a safety, he was too big and he couldn't carry people into space. And obviously I'm not going to go calling it 2017 fifth round selection a bust is unnecessary, especially when you consider a positional change. But as of right now, like he's a good overhang defender. He is good in space when there's like a wide receiver screen over to his side of the field. He can get there pretty quick. Like that's a good situation. He's a good tackler, but he can't be trusted to fill linebacking roles yet. And so that's my take, is that Nate Gary is bad. in cohesion with this take in as a pair. I have a second take. It's that Kamu Grugier-Hill is good and he should be starting as the Will backer, which to me, it's still amazing that we just haven't seen Corey Nelson take like second team reps, let alone first team reps. Like they never really gave him a shot.
It's wild because that was my favorite because they promised him a playing time. That's why he came here. He has starting experience and he played like solid. I watched like literally every snap of his a couple years ago when he was forced into starting playing time in Denver. He was their third down, like long distance dime specialist. So he's got the coverage skills and we have seen nothing from him. It's been terribly
disappointing. He's good on special teams. He's good on punt coverage.
He's great.
Really like, yeah, he's awesome. Really excited about that. No, Kamu's the man. Kamu is such a nice space tackler he closes really, really well into the boundary, which is a lot of fun because it helps him play in the perimeter. He's very often that fifth man on the line of scrimmage because he's a fantastic blitzer and a rusher in a way I did not know, which is definitely the special teams background showing up now that I've thought about it. Yeah. And he's the best cover man of the three easily, which to me is the most important thing.
Did you? Because I put this article up on Bleeding Green Nation where I broke it down and it was the fans had a favorite at Will linebacker and it was Kamu. And there was that speed option that the Steelers ran last week with Josh Dobbs and Steven Ridley. And Kamu comes down, right, squeezes his gap. And what needs to happen is behind him, Nate Gary has to come around, beat the block from the tackle who is climbing because the tackle's ignoring Kamu. Right.
So was Kamu like the end man on the line of scrimmage?
He was the end man on the line of scrimmage. So he's forcing the pitch. That's his responsibility. Uh-huh. Nate Gary has to come across, beat his block, and then get into space and get that running back. Kamu did both jobs. He squeezed it, forced the pitch, and man, did he burst out of that stance. And he was coiled up, ready to go, went and made the play for like a 3-yard loss. It was an excellent play. I'm like, this dude has some range, and I went because I hadn't looked at it in a while, and I knew he was an athletic dude, but I looked at his pro day results, and I was like, this guy's got like a really good athletic profile, and that got me like really excited about his prospects as a potential starter. And you watch him in coverage, and he's solid. It should be his job.
Here's and the most important thing to remember is that Michael Kendricks was handsome and is now gone. And Kamu is handsome and is now in his spot. And I think that's the greatest signifier. And it's a shame because Jordan Hicks is also handsome. We don't talk about that enough because Michael Kendricks was very handsome. But Kamu is pretty handsome. And to me, it's very clear that he's ready to step into the Michael Kendricks role. The illustrious Michael Kendricks, who said that the Browns have the talent to be better than the Eagles.
Jeez.
And also had one tackle tonight. Yeah, that Michael Kendricks.
He really showed up. Like, dude, usually preseason is like his time to shine.
Yeah, remember last year? What happened to like 4 interceptions in the preseason, Michael Kendricks? Where did he go? Bring him back.
Yeah, it's not like Nick Foles was like on his game or anything. It should have been prime for him.
True.
Any other closing thoughts before we talk about what we have next on the lineup for Bleeding Green Nation?
I liked how there were just no helmet penalties whatsoever. I thought that
weird,
was fun.
Right?
Yeah, especially because the clarification came out that was like, hey, if it's unintended contact, don't call it. And the refs were like, all right, got it. Don't call anything. Listen, the helmet rule is like Nick Foles. You really just don't know what you're going to get on a game-to-game basis. So that's thrilling. Adds a lot of spice to the NFL viewing experience. I really enjoyed Corey Udlin like celebrating and then, you know, expressing his disappointment with that Rasul Douglas play on the sidelines. I thought that was funny.
Yeah.
Oh, one of my losers that we should just bring up as a note because it's important. Shelton Gibson is good at what he's good at, but he's still bad at what he's bad at.
Contact. He got squeezed on the sideline. I saw that.
Yes. See, I'm so happy you saw it. That's why I like you, Mike, because there was that curl route that could have been picked off by Terrence Mitchell.
Because he didn't come back through.
Backing away, right? And then when they cut back from commercial, they were doing like a little audio montage. And Gunter Brewer, my favorite position coach, because he's the cutest little old man southern voice ever, was like, you got to make sure you're coming back to that ball now, Shelton. Like we say, shorten the throw, you know? Like he's just like super friendly and happy on the sideline. It's so funny. And then, yeah, there was that deep ball where he just got bodied into the sideline. Yeah. And that's something that if you don't know what you're looking for, you're not going to notice that as a problem. But it is. Because if you're going to be a deep threat, you've got to keep space on your in between your outside shoulder and the boundary so the quarterback can put the ball there and you can attack it without the corner being able to make a play on it. When you get squeezed into the boundary and there's no space between you and the sideline, there's nowhere to put the football. right? Yeah. It needs to be a perfect throw every time, and that's not going to be the case. So, yeah, Gibson is – in the first two games, we saw Gibson be good at what he's good at. In this game, we saw him be bad at what he's bad at. So it's important to understand what he is as a role player.
Yeah, definitely. He got that hand on him when he tried to speed release and couldn't get that hand off, and that's what ended up – he just has issues with contact. And, I mean, we talked about it the last time that we talked. So, I mean, there it is. I can – I'll put the rep up on Twitter if you want to see it. But, yeah, definitely had issues with that. Okay, so moving on to what we got going on next week. I've actually got some awesome news. I spent this morning talking with the chief innovation officer and Frigo. Co-founder for both Edge Analytics and Edge Sports, Frank Frigo. And we had a nice Frigo.
I've only seen his name written out, and so in my head, it's Frigo.
I had to go back to the podcast when he was on Wharton Moneyball and figure out how to say it because I didn't want to disrespect him. It was cool, too, because it was the first podcast like interview that I've ever had where two other people were in the room. And one person was like directing me through and like getting directions for me and then giving it to him. And then just kind of setting everything up. And I actually had to help them. They just got a Yeti microphone. So I had to help them set up their Yeti microphone and everything like that. It was a
look at lead voice podcast producer, Michael Kist out here. Lead voice podcast producer for BGN Radio, Michael Kist. Look at lead voice podcast producer over here.
So if you don't know who Edge Analytics are, the Eagles were the only team in the NFL to hire Edge Analytics to help them with their decision making. And a lot of the decisions that they made on fourth down were most likely influenced by Edge Analytics model. And they agree with him on a lot of the fourth downs that he went for. They have something like it's called game winning chance. And you're going to hear all about this when I drop that fireside chat number 3 with Frank Frigo from Edge Analytics. But I'll put it to you this way. One team used Edge Analytics. One team won the Super Bowl. That's all the proof that you need, in my opinion. And it was a really enlightening discussion. And I think you're going to like it. And if you want to follow the Philadelphia Eagles and understand more about your team, this is something that they've invested in heavily. They have a robust analytics department. And Edge Analytics is part of that. So I would highly suggest listening to that, not just because it's me on it, but honestly, like it's really good material and it might challenge the way that you look at football because it definitely takes not some shots, but it definitely challenges traditional thinking in professional football. So that's all we have for you today. Ben, you want to say goodbye to the gentle listeners and tell them to rate, review, and subscribe.
I appreciate you telling them what's coming up and then telling me what to say. It's saving me from freeballing it here. But as always, thank you so much for listening to the Kist and Solak show here on BGN Radio. We do greatly appreciate it. I have been Benjamin Solak on Twitter at Benjamin Solak. That's S-O-L-A-K. He has been Michael Kist on Twitter at Michael Kist NFL. That's K-I-S-T. BGN Radio under the new feed, of course, scrounging away for those new reflection or those new reviews and those new ratings. Last I checked, we were knocking on the door of 100 ratings. I'm pretty sure we're in the mid 90s right now. And so if you enjoyed the podcast, and let's be real, you did, go ahead and leave a 5-star rating and a review. We do really appreciate that because that helps bump us up on the list and get more people listening, which we want to bring them the best Philadelphia Eagles audio content this season, and we want to bring it to as many of them as we can. Thank you so much for stopping by. We'll talk to you again pretty soon.
We all we got, we all we need. Fly, Eagles, fly.
Hey guys, this is John Stolness from The Good Fight and the Phillies podcast, Hittin' Season. Man, the 2018 season was, well, it was interesting anyway, and the upcoming offseason looks to be even more interesting. So if you want to stay up to date on all things Phillies this offseason, subscribe to The Good Fight podcast feed and get my podcast, Hittin' Season, where I talk to Phillies beat writers, broadcasters, and fellow Good Fight bloggers, as well as national baseball writers, and the occasional interview with Matt Klentak and Gabe Kapler. Also, you'll get Continued Success, a Phil's podcast hosted by Justin Clue and Liz Rocher, covering all things Phillies, and The Dirty Inning, a hilarious podcast hosted by Justin and Trevor Strunk, looking at the very worst innings in Phillies history. And you'll get bonus podcasts every time big news is made with the team. Seriously, if you want to stay up to date on everything revolving around your favorite baseball team as they return to contention, make sure you are subscribed to the Good Fight podcast feed.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smart Water Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure, it's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smart Water Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.